What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast. Brendan and Dom are back on the show, and it is Friday, September 22nd. We have a few different topics we're going to go over with you guys today. First things first, we're going to go over the alleged rumor that the Phoenix Suns are maybe a dark horse to land Damian Lillard. The Wizards haven't been in the news much, but recently they did re-sign Taj Gibson, so we'll go over that and what it means for the Wizards this season. And then at the end, we will go over the World Cup, and specifically is international talent around the world catching up to the United States. But before we get into these topics, I just want to remind you guys to please rate the show 5 stars. It really helps us out a lot. Leave a comment if you're enjoying the show, any topics you'd like to see us talk about, if there's something you think that we can improve on. And please make sure that you guys are subscribing, because that helps us out a ton. Going to our first topic, according to reports, the Phoenix Suns are a dark horse to land Damian Lillard. Now, we know that the Phoenix Suns have been in NBA news, trade news specifically, a lot recently at the deadline. They acquired Kevin Durant, and not too long ago, they, of course, acquired our all-star level guard, Bradley Beal. So now the Phoenix Suns have DeAndre Ayton, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal at their disposal. So they're going to be one of the better teams in the West this year. But it seems that new ownership over there may not be done and may not be content with the current construction of their team. And they did have a decent free agency for what it's worth. They got Eric Gordon, Catesby DeJop, Drew Eubanks, among others. So they had a decent offseason with what they had to work with. But going back to Damian Lillard here, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I just don't see a way that they're going to be able to get this done. Now, there is always a way, as we've seen with teams and making transactions in the past, there is always a way. I'd be a little hesitant with the new tax apron rule, but if they're able to get it done and land a player of his caliber, I think that you should, of course, do that. I'm just not sure they're going to be able to have the assets. Of course, a third or fourth team would have to get involved, but I don't know what the incentive would be for these other teams to help facilitate getting Damian Lillard to a team like the Phoenix Suns, when you consider that the Phoenix Suns don't have any assets to trade out. All their draft picks are going to other teams or are tied up in swaps because of trade. So I'm not really sure how they'd be able to make that happen.
Yeah, I would have thought something like that would have been in play for them before they made the Bradley Beal to get Dame. But I don't see why. I think Portland would probably be trying to get more than like a DeAndre Ayton type package, because that's the only way I see them pulling that off. It would be sending DeAndre Ayton there, because you got to make the salary match. But I just don't, and that's tough. I mean, because their owner, he is kind of like on, you know, he's playing like fantasy football with the roster right now. He's a former point guard, so I'd imagine he probably has a bias towards, you know, elite level guards. So, you know, he don't Dame, Beal, Devin Booker plus KD, like that's a lot of firepower, but man, you're not gonna have nothing left for the rest of your roster. But I tell you what, from an entertainment standpoint, I would love to see it. I don't see how they'd be able to get that done with a DeAndre Ayton package. Like, I just think they would have to give up a lot more, and they don't have that a lot more to give. So,
right, because I mean, if I'm Portland, I'd much rather have Tyler Hero than DeAndre Ayton, and that's not saying a lot. It's just DeAndre Ayton, for the player that he is, he's a decent enough offensive big, but he's not really a defensive anchor and is not that high level of a rebounder. So I wouldn't be trying to pour assets into an offensive-minded big when we've seen that what's going to win, and the outlier here is Jokic. But your big men that are most useful on playoff-contending rosters at this point are types like Nick Claxton or Robert Williams or Mitchell Robinson, athletic guys that can get up and down the floor
and finish at the rim. And DeAndre Ayton is just not that player. So for the salary that he's making, I'm not sure that it's that desirable of a contract. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm not saying he can't be useful to teams. He's going to be useful for Phoenix when he suits up this year, for sure. He's not a liability. And
no.
But it's just when you consider positional value, what he's able to do at his position, I would rather take the Heat offer where they also have draft picks to give out.
And see, I'm going to push back a little bit on that because I think for Portland's team makeup, I think they might actually prefer a player like Eaton, somebody that in theory could kind of anchor your glass, playing the glass and your interior defense, because they really don't have a big man prospect on that roster. Like, they got hella guards, they got some okay wings, but they have no young big men whatsoever. And I think Ayton would be a nice fresh start from him, change the scenery, where he would be kind of, I don't want to say featured, but he would definitely get more touches there than he will ever probably in Phoenix again. So in Tyler Hero, like, what does Tyler Hero do that they don't already have on that roster? Between Simons, you got Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe. Like, they don't need Tyler Hero's player type, which is why I think the deal right now with Dame is just so held up, because they don't want Tyler Hero. And it's like, who's the other team that's willing to take Tyler Hero, and what other type of other assets are they rerouting to Portland that Portland would even want? But I think Ayton would fit nice with Portland with their their group of young guards they have. It's just that if you're getting Ayton from the Suns don't have anything else to give. So it's like you lean more with Miami because they got other stuff to throw in with Tyler Hero, or, you know, if they reroute them or whatever they do, they got more stuff to throw in. They at least have first round picks to give where the Suns don't. So.
Right. Exactly. I mean, from a fit standpoint, you make a great point. Like, they don't really have a big, they have a couple guys on two-way contracts, but I think that's really it. They don't really have another young big to work with. They have Yusuf Nurkic on the roster, but odds are he's probably going to be on his way out, and you really can't count on him to play a ton of games anyway, because it seems like he's banged up all the time. So yeah, I mean, DeAndre Ayton from a fit standpoint would definitely be a good fit, but again, it's, you know, that they just, Phoenix just doesn't have any draft picks there to make that work. So again, you have to bring in other teams, and I just don't see how other teams are going to get incentivized that much to help make picks happen to go to the other team, or to go to Portland to help facilitate that deal with Dame going to Phoenix. I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. But it's cool, though, and they should at least look into it, right? And that's the thing. You're not always going to hear about it, but when you do, it's nice. Like, you know, Tommy Shepard, for better or worse, he at least was, I feel like, consistently in the news when it came to star players. Now, he may not have ever acquired any of these guys. I mean, he did get Porzingis, which still turned out to be a good deal, even in hindsight. But he was still in the news a fair amount when it came to acquiring players around the league, and that's what you want to hear, right? And I feel like a lot of the time when fans hear that in the news, it's, oh, it's something serious that might happen, and that's not always the case, but I feel like you have to do your due diligence as a front office just to check in on guys to see, because you never know what you can work out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tommy definitely called around, but I just didn't think, you know, he was just working from a position of limited resources, because he didn't have them. Like, he just didn't have them. So, you know, it wasn't going to happen here. Like, it just wasn't going to happen here. But yeah, I think in regards to, you know, the Sun, but in regards to Portland, they don't need, if I'm them, I'm taking my time on this. They don't need to rush. Like, a deal will materialize, but I just think I just don't think there's a lot of teams out here banging on the door to help facilitate it.
And there shouldn't be.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be. There's no, you know, there shouldn't be.
Right. Like, if you're any of those Western Conference teams and you may want to help facilitate a trade, and it's like, why would I help you? I don't want to get curb stomped by Dame and Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, you know, twice, three, four times a season. You know, pass on that. So.
Right.
Anyway, an interesting topic nonetheless. Moving on to the second discussion of our three-part podcast today. We haven't been in the news a lot recently. Now, you got to give credit to Michael Wenger and Will Dawkins. This was about some of the biggest splashes you could have made as an organization coming into your first year. I mean, they have completely transformed the team. And we'll get into that more here in a second, because I think that there's a couple things that we're still a little unclear about as it pertains to the direction and their team makeup that they want to have going forward. But they did re-sign Taj Gibson, and we did record an episode a few weeks ago, or a couple weeks ago, when I was back home in Virginia, and I was going to edit it and post it, and I totally forgot that I didn't bring my laptop with me, so I wasn't able to edit it when I went back to the house. But we did discuss this briefly, so we won't spend too much time on it, but the Wizards did need to sign or acquire another center in some fashion, because right now the only centers prior to the signing of Gibson were Daniel Gafford and Mike Muscala. And I don't think that either of those guys right now you can say you can count on. I think that Daniel Gafford is a fine player until he shows that he can play 30 minutes a night, stay out of foul trouble, be in better conditioning. He's still, to me, best suited as a backup. So he's going to have every opportunity in the world this year to prove that he's a starter, but they still needed to add some depth there. Muscala is a nice stretch big, but doesn't provide much else. He's probably best suited as a third center. So we needed someone else to kind of fill in the gap there. And they decided to go with Taj Gibson out of all options. Now, look, I'm fine with Wes keeping one or two of his guys, but when you consider the team makeup right now, we already had a decent amount of veterans, which was already questionable as it was, because we're still not really sure who's going to play what position, why, like, what's the incentive to playing some of these veterans. But it seems like that's kind of the direction they're leaning a little bit, but it's still puzzling a little why they decided to go with Gibson when they could have gotten a younger player who was perhaps unproven or had some potential and maybe some nice traits. But nope, they decided to go with Taj Gibson. So what were your thoughts on Will Dawkins and Michael Wenger deciding to bring back Gibson for what seems like will be his 30th season?
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it really matters. In the short term, I just think he was an available body that they have familiarity with, that, you know, is going to be a presence in the locker room. And if nothing else, he's going to hold guys accountable and hustle. Because there were a lot of games I remember watching last year where he seemed like the only big man that could put a body on somebody and box him out and go get a rebound, like a contested rebound in the, you know, in the crunch moments of the game where every possession was key. Like, it seemed like Taj Gibson was the only guy willing to go die for basketball. So I get why he's back. I just think just the five-man rotation right now as it is, and I said this, like, I think last week on Twitter, I was just saying, like, you know, this is possibly, like, the worst center rotation in the NBA. And I think it's kind of by design. Like, I don't think Dawkins really values the position like that. When I look at the Thunder roster from last year, like, if you look at their top two rebounders, 6'4" Dort, Lou Dort, and their point guard, Josh Giddey, like, that's who led them in rebounds last year. They literally played the whole season without a center in their top rotation. Mike Muscala was like the 12th man. Like, he rarely got impactful minutes for them. So I don't think he values it that much. So it looks like we're going to be playing kind of like a modern small ball scheme this year, and I'm anxious to see how it looks.
Yeah, we can kind of get more into that now, and we talked about it before we started recording, but the identity of the roster is a little bit in a flux, you could say, because we're not exactly sure. It seems that they want to add some veterans and tie in the veteran presence, which is fine. I think that you should have veteran presence. You never want to go into just a full rebuild when you have a bunch of young guys, the way that Philadelphia tried doing it a while back, the way that OKC is doing it now. I don't entirely agree with that whole approach. I don't think that that's how you build a proper team. I think that you need to have a nice balance. However, the veterans that the Wizards have decided to keep are just really low-level guys. And if you're going to be keeping these low-level type of veterans, it really just makes me question why you're keeping them on the team to begin with. And we can go down the line here. I mean, Anthony Gill, Xavier Cooks, Gallinari, Muscala, Gibson now is back. So it's just making me question a little bit what exactly their thought process is with keeping some of these guys. Now, two of these guys could be gone because as of right now, the Wizards have 17 guaranteed contracts. And of course, we all know that they have to get to the league maximum of 15 by the time the regular season comes around. So two guys are going to be gone, whether it's via trade or whether they just release guys. And we don't know. I mean, something could happen where they end up finding a trade partner for some of these guys. But honestly, I feel like the only one you'd be able to try to find a trade partner for is Gallinari. And even I don't think that at this point with him coming off that injury is going to be a guarantee. So what do you make of how they've constructed their roster? And do you personally find it puzzling that they decided to keep around not just veterans, but the type of veterans that they've kept around?
Yeah, I just think this is kind of like, I'm not surprised by it. Like I said, these are like familiar bodies for the org. And Wes has some say in this too, right? Like, you know, as far as guys he trusts their work ethic, their locker room presence, because you don't want to bring a vet in and they kind of disrupt, you know, your locker room because they looking to get a contract or they looking to reinvent themselves. Like, you want guys that's going to kind of be an extension of your coach. And if Wes has a familiarity with them already, I can see why he would want to keep some of them around. Now, the rubber going to have to meet the road because, like you just mentioned, two of them, somebody gone because they had 17. They got to get to 15. So, but if you notice, though, most of these vets, with the exception of DeLon, are, you know, front court players. Like, these are guys that I just don't think are going to be here long term. But in the short term, they kind of help you set a direction and keep guys in line and set an example for the youngins that are here that you actually do want to build around for going forward or possibly, you know, prop up to use as trade bait going forward. Because, I mean, between the guys you name, I mean, none of those guys are guys you're going to see as centerpieces of a trade deal. So they're here for I think, locker room purposes, because I don't even think most of them are even going to play.
Right. And you mentioned that most of them were front court players, and they already have Denny Avdia that they're going to have to give minutes to. They have Corey Kispert, which I know he's kind of a 2-3, but you can still consider him a little bit in that front court if he's going to get minutes at the three. Kuzma's going to get minutes. You would figure that out of the talented ones there that they would play Gallinari. Do they view – I know that they would probably like for Koulibaly to play the two eventually, but right now he's probably considered a front court player. So they already have a number of guys that play those positions that they're going to need to find playing time for. And again, it's just going to be tough to try and find minutes for all those guys. So if I'm sure that two of those guys that I mentioned at the top there are going to be gone. And again, I'm cool with bringing in veterans. If we could bring decent role player veterans, like, this isn't Emeka Okafor or Gortat or Nene or Ariza or Andre Miller or Drew Gooden even. Like, it's not those types of guys. The only one that you could, you know, DeLon Wright, of course, who I didn't mention at the top, but him and Gallinari are like the only two that would probably get minutes on another NBA roster. So that's like three guys right now where it's like,
those are the two I expect to play, DeLon and Gallinari. All the rest of them, I don't see them playing. I don't see any of them being in the top 10 of the rotation. Even Mike Muscala. I don't even know that Mike Muscala is going to play. I really don't. Like, I would pin DeLon. And like I said, DeLon and Gallo is guys that will play. But other than that, I have my doubts that they'll really see the floor like that. Because I just think, just based on what I saw OKC do last year, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of small ball when Gafford's not on the floor.
Yeah, and again, we just talked about it, but like Gil, Cooks, and Muscala, and Gibson, those are four guys right now that are they going to get serious minutes on any other NBA roster? Like, you know, maybe one or two, you know, break glass in case of emergency, but really, no, and we're carrying four of them. So two of those spots you could give to younger players, and of course, two we got to cut. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I know some of these guys we had to acquire via trade to get a deal done. So I get that, but again, it's like we were already surplus on that, and then they chose to bring back Taj Gibson. We could have went with someone else who was a little bit younger, maybe had some juice left in the legs. At least someone who is athletic and can run the floor, because as we can see, those types of bigs are very valuable in the modern NBA. So that's all.
Yeah. Like in short term, in the grand scheme, I don't think it's going to matter much. Because like I said, this roster could look completely different 2 years from now, like where 80% of the guys are gone. But as for now, I think we know who the young guys that they want to get answers on and know what they got and develop. And then the vets are kind of just, you know, they'll be there for, you know, support, not really to really be playing.
Right. And to be fair to the Wizards in this situation, I feel like this is what happens a lot of the time. And we see this in both football and basketball. When you're in year one and you completely transform your team, year one is usually going to be a crapshoot. And part of that reason is because you have a mix of these players that don't necessarily gel together, but you got to do what you got to do for the first year because you don't want to just let players go for nothing. And you're paying them to essentially not play for you. So I understand the optics of that as well. And again, that's why I don't think that fans should be too hard on the results of the team this year. Now, if they go out and win 20 or 22 or less games, then yeah, I mean, there's probably a big, big problem. But, you know, I feel like we'll probably win 25 to 32, 33 games, and that should be expected. They're not going to be that great of a team this year. And who knows, maybe Jordan Poole will play really well. Maybe Koulibaly will have matured a lot between summer league and the middle to end of the regular season. You never know. That's why they go out there and play the game, right? But I think that year one, we kind of knew that it was just going to kind of be a crapshoot. And then next offseason and the offseason after that, we'll really start to see Michael Winger and Will Dawkins implement what their plan was for this team, more long-term oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think the 20, you know, Bilal, obviously 24, 25 and the 26 NBA drafts is where I think they're really putting their resources into to flip this team around. So I'm anxious. I'm anxious to see where we go. Where we go from here.
Last topic of the day. Gilbert Arenas put out a video a while back basically explaining that the world is not catching up to the USA in terms of its talent. And it, of course, got a lot of traction. And the NBA in recent years, and they've been doing this for a while now, has put an emphasis on international talent and trying to just expand the world of basketball as a whole. So it's not just the United States. It's now played in a lot of places. It's now the second most popular sport in the world, I believe, behind soccer. So it's definitely still growing. It's not as well established as soccer is, but still a lot of countries are starting to play basketball. And I think what's helping is we have a lot of international players that aren't just having NBA success, but are winning MVPs, are winning championships. And I think that goes a lot of, a long way when marketing the game of basketball as a whole, because it's not just the Americans running up and down the court. These are guys that come from other countries at the age of 18, and they build solid careers for themselves where they're multiple time all-stars. They're making all NBA. Again, they're winning MVPs. They're winning championships. And I think that that probably means a lot and holds a lot of weight to international kids who may or may not be slightly interested in basketball and can completely change their mindset on the decision to actually decide to take it seriously long term. So I disagree with Gil a little bit in that the world isn't catching up, because we've seen a lot of international players now have more success in this league than ever before. So I think it would be ignorant to say that the international talent hasn't gotten better. But at the same time, as it relates to the World Cup, if the United States chose to play their best players every year, it would be a wash. There would be no reason to play. And we saw that for a while back when LeBron was playing, Dwayne Wade, Kobe. It just wasn't close. We were just beating teams left and right. And we could still do that if we chose to play our best players. But the program has tried to go the route of playing younger guys who are established in the league, but, you know, they aren't multiple all NBA level players. They aren't MVPs. They're not championship guys. They're trying to find guys like Tyrese Halliburton, Mikal Bridges, young players who get fans excited, and the all-star, and the all-star potential is there and the superstar potential is there, but they're still working their way up to that. They're not, you know, the LeBron, Jokic, Antetokounmpo level players. And for better or worse, that's the decision that they decided to go with. So I disagree with Gil that the world isn't getting better, because I think that they are. But as it pertains to the World Cup, if the U.S. decided to play their best players, it wouldn't be close.
Yeah, I think Gil was kind of reacting to some of the extreme takes that I was also seeing, kind of like, because like people were drumming it up as if to say, like, you know, yeah, it's the America's B team, but other countries are sending their B team and this and that. And I'm just kind of like, you know, for me, it's like, when did the World Cup become the litmus test of U.S. basketball? Because last I checked, like, the World Cup was never that the thing to brag about. When we talk about Hall of Fame resumes, nobody talks about how many World Cup medals you have. Right. Like, nobody. Right? We talk about the Olympics and how many NBA championships you have, not the World Cup. And if you look back, I was looking back on it the last week, you know, over the last, since not going back to 1990, America has only won 3 of the last 9 World Cup tournaments. 3 of the last 9. And the reason for that is because we don't send our best. We really haven't ever sent our best players over to that, because that's usually, the World Cup was in between the time of the Olympics, and guys don't want to commit their bodies to that type of wear and tear, where you're going through an 82-game regular season, then you go, you play World Cup. Say you play World Cup in 2010, and then that means you got the Olympics in 2012. Then you will have to come back 2014 and play World Cup again. Like, we're not, the best players aren't going to put their body through that type of toll when they're, when, like I said, they got to play 82 games to compete for an NBA championship every year. So, which is the pinnacle of basketball. I would say, you know, for me, I feel like the world has caught up to America as far as basketball when we're sending our kids there to develop their game. But what you actually see is players, kids from other countries coming to American universities, playing in American AAU structure and systems, to develop their games, and then they go to the NBA and so on and so forth. It's not as rare where you're seeing guys that like a Nikola Jokic who developed his game strictly over from his home country. Same thing with Luka. But you got kind of these like hybrid guys that, you know, they lived maybe their first 8 years in that country, in their birth country, and then they were in America by the time they were in middle school, and they pretty much developed their whole game from there in American system. But then, you know, you play for your home country. So I guess in a sense, it's like, yeah, it's kind of caught up. But, you know, I think people were kind of making these leaps and writing these think pieces, going a little too far, almost as if to say that, you know, America is on this, you know, path to, you know, losing back-to-back Olympics in basketball. And I'm just like, the World Cup is not evidence of that. If you want to use some other things you could bring up, even though it's really not there, sure. But if we're using the World Cup for that, I'm just like, when did that start happening? To me, that's just people just looking for a hot take to me.
Yeah, and that's definitely what a lot of social media is now. And there's people that, like, yeah, they do it on purpose just to get react. And it's funny that people still fall for it every time, because for me, I can mostly tell when something's just bait and they're trying to get a reaction out of people. But some people are really wild enough to have some of the opinions that they do. So it does make me question it sometimes. And I feel like a lot of people were actually genuinely serious about this topic, that the United States was just somehow getting worse at basketball and the world was having those on this big come up that the United States just wasn't going to be able to compete with. And like you said, we're only sending our guys over there when they're 37, 38 years old and want to make a few bucks before they're like 41, 42 years old. So when it starts happening the opposite way, then, you know, that we could start having that discussion. But until that day, it is clear that the United States is in control of the basketball world, you could say, for lack of a better term. We're the leader. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon.
No time soon. No time soon. Because, again, like, and again, it's just, it is what it is. Like with soccer, like, we know we don't have the best players in the world when it comes to soccer. Like if the United States was to somehow win an Olympic, the men's team was to somehow win an Olympic medal in soccer, I'm not going to get on, you know, Twitter or X and be like, yeah, you know, now we the new kings of soccer. We, you know, this, you know, that's our sport now. Like, hell no. Like, it's a lot. It's too much. It's too much history that says otherwise. There's too many other pieces of evidence that say otherwise. And that's the Olympics, let alone a World Cup. Like, the World Cup is just kind of like, again, I'm just trying to figure out when everybody cares so much about the World Cup, because I don't remember that being a thing. It's always been Olympic play. And that's where you see guys really take it serious, and we send our best guys. And with the exception of 2004, we've won every Olympic medal in basketball. So since, you know, dating back to 92. So when that starts changing, and like I said, we start farming our kids over to other countries to develop their game, then we can have a real serious conversation about the United States losing their grip on basketball internationally. But until then, nowhere near close.
I think that there's a lot of people too, when we have a discussion about United States citizens, and this isn't going to be turned into a political discussion, but I think that there are those that I don't want to say are unpatriotic, but I think they want to give the world a little bit more shine, because I think all the time in the news, it's America's doing this, America's doing that. And the people that are really patriotic here are of course going to think that we're leaders in almost every aspect of pretty much anything, which we of course know is not true. But I think that there's that side that says, no, we are not good at everything, and here's why, here's why, here's why. And I think that this is probably one of the topics that stems from that. And I get wanting to give other countries the shine and acknowledge them, particularly when it comes to this topic. I'm totally on board with that because I love the game of basketball. And if we get more players around the world that are better at basketball, it's going to not just increase my interest because there's going to be a better talent pool, but it's going to make the world more interested in basketball as a whole, which I think everyone can say that they would like to see happen. So again, I get it, but I do think that there's that side of people that, again, it doesn't come from being unpatriotic, I don't think, but it's just they want other countries to feel acknowledged and that they matter. But again, I think that there were some extremes in this topic that just take it too far, and then it kind of washes out the basic truths of the argument.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't understand why though, because it's like we've always ran basketball. Like, what's wrong with that? Just like, you know, other countries run soccer or run other sports. You know, when you think track, when I think of track, I think of Jamaica, right? Like, so it's like, it's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's okay. Like, what's the push to try to change what has been? It is what it is. Like, it is what it is. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, a country sticking their chest out to say, hey, we run basketball. Like, it's nothing wrong with that. Just like it's no different than other countries who dominate in their perspective sports. Like, it's okay. Like, why does it have to be this? Oh, we got to give equal praise out. Like, I just think it's ridiculous. It's followed by these hot takes that, you know, just come out of nowhere. And I'm just like, come on, man, that's not what the evidence is really showing here. But, you know, you people really get these think pieces off.
Right. And again, I'm not going to make it political, but you do see the same type of thing within political discussions where there can be an argument, a good point made for a certain point of view, and then someone tries to come in with a hot take and you just spew out nonsense just because of whatever. And then it washes out the rest of the people that are trying to have like a legit mutual discussion, or they're basically trying to make the same point. It's just, oh, I disagree with this small part or whatever. And then someone comes in, no, I disagree with this completely because blah, blah, blah. So it happens all the time. And again, I try to tell myself all the time that Twitter is not a real place. And again, I think that a lot of the time people just do it on purpose just to get reactions. But either way, it just makes it not a fun place and it doesn't make it enjoyable. So if you're one of those people, knock it off, man. Most people want to have reasonable and honest discussions, whether it's sports or anything else. For sure. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we cut this one?
Nah, man, that's all I got, man. When the season start, man, I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to watch some basketball, like some games that count.
Should be around the corner. We should be starting camp pretty soon, right? I know the Wizards have been tweeting pictures, but I don't think that they're in camp yet, right?
No. They haven't officially started training camp yet. Looks like
you would imagine. It would come at the beginning of the month, right?
Yeah, I would think, you know, early October, it should be ready to ramp up because the season start like the end of October or early November. So it should be soon.
It's exciting because either way, basketball is around the corner. We know when football starts getting kicked off that, you know, basketball is usually short to follow. So definitely excited to enjoy the Wizard season with you all. Per usual, we're going to be, of course, we'll have our podcast. There are also multiple Wizards podcasts that you guys can check out as well. And we're going to be doing some collaborations this season, like we always do. But I think we're going to try and set up a big preseason roundtable discussion sort of deal. We're still trying to work that out with a couple other potential shows that we're trying to collab with. But either way, a lot of good Wizards content out. It's coming soon. We're going to be doing our Twitter spaces, of course, this year. So make sure you guys tune into those. But I'm excited, man. We're almost there. And no matter what the results are in the win-loss record, I think unless Wes Unseld Jr. is just flat out terrible, which it could be, could happen. Another discussion for another day. But I think we're in store for what should be an entertaining season at minimum. And for what the direction of the team is, I think that that's about as good as you can get.
For sure. For sure.
Well, thank you guys for listening to another episode today. Just as a reminder, please make sure you rate us 5 stars, leave us a comment, and subscribe to the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.